The way KPFT works, sustainers help us meet our operating expenses without days and days of on-air fundraising. That means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, visit kpft.org to make a difference today. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
Percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 8 p.m. on a Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and the art of telling them right here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Well, I'm your guest host tonight, Eric Keen, and I'm backed up by the talented team of Drs. Hank Rubicek, Warren Holloman, and Mary Edgerton, as well as Greg Audell, and our guest hosts are Harwood Taylor and Chris Gorman and Paul Topekian. And of course, our engineer and media maven is Tatiana Gago. And here on So What's Your Story, we celebrate the power of story. We do this by bringing you guests each week to take you on enchanting journeys before landing us safely back into the present. Now, as you know, we here at KPFT, we're a public radio station, commercial-free, and we are having another fund drive. So what I'd like to ask you is this. If you're able to help, we would sure appreciate it. If you can't swing financial support at this time, then continue to do what we love having you do. Tune in every week for Houston's original storytelling show. And if you find a few extra bucks, think about sending it our way so we can continue to bring you the best in Houston radio. It's all online, so head over to kpft.org, go to donations, make your pledge, and please scroll down to So What's Your Story as the show you support. Or go to our So What's Your Story Facebook page to make your donation and catch up on the world of storytelling at the same time, including previews of our guests, themes, and much more. Always know how much we need you and love you all. This is your station. It's your show. Well, our studio's still in lockdown mode, so we're still concocting our programs from our own homes, and we're getting the hang of it. Bottom line is we're still bringing you some good stories every week. On tonight's show, we're going to hear stories from people on the front lines in the world of animal rescue. And we got all the bases covered tonight. Pet detectives, an animal cruelty investigator, wildlife people, stories of rescuing everything from aardvarks to tarantulas. These are the people who make life a little better for our animal friends. And our first guest this evening is Adam Reynolds. A little bit about him. Adam retired from the Marine Corps after 21 years of service. And after receiving degrees in Homeland Security and Safety Leadership, Adam became the chief investigator of the Animal Cruelty Department of the SPCA. Adam, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you for having me.
You betcha. Could you tell us briefly, before we get to your stories here, what your position is there and what your mission is in your department?
Sure. So I'm the chief cruelty investigator for the Houston SPCA. I have the awesome privilege of leading three teams. I have nine cruelty investigators that operate not only in Harris County, but also the nine surrounding counties. I also oversee the animal rescue team, which is five members that operate an ambulance for unowned injured animals in Harris County. And then we also have an equine and farm team that oversees all of our equine and farm animals that we encounter.
Wow. You cover a lot of aspects of the animal kingdom there.
Yes, sir.
So why don't we hear some stories about your adventures?
One of the stories that is one of my favorites, it happened in January of this year, in a time before COVID, if we can even remember that. Of course, it was late in the evening when all of our bad cases come in. So we're trying to get out the door to go home. but we received a phone call from the Montgomery County Constable's office. Their report was there was an altercation in a suburban neighborhood, and the deputy stated that he said he saw what he said was 1,000 animals.
That was good.
1,000. So usually, you know, we hear numbers. Our math is completely different, I think, from all other math aspects. You know, we hear 1,000 and we think, posse, you know, that can't be right. We also hear, you know, I only have 10 cats, and we think that can't be right either. I bet it's 100. So, but the report was it was 1,000 animals. We made location. We linked up with the constable's office, and when we entered the house, I could see where they got that number. It was a 3-bedroom house, and it was full of animals. Not only the house, but also the backyard. They had inside the house, inside the bedrooms. There was one bedroom that was just hens. There was one bedroom that was just roosters. They had rabbits running across the floor. There were cockatoos, cockatiels, and parrots in cages stacked in the living room. In the backyard, there were turkey and geese and Vietnamese potbelly pigs, along with, you know, also some dogs and cats. I believe they had an iguana. You name it. It was inside this house. And the living conditions were horrible. You know, we say that about just about all of our locations, but this one truly was. The ammonia levels from the house, from the urine-soaked floors were horrible. I can remember the investigators, as we were walking through the house, the wood floors were squishy. It was so bad. The animals were in horrible condition. Anytime you have that many animals in a confined space, you're going to see, you know, rampant disease and a lot of medical issues. And we found that there, you know, all of the animals were definitely cruelly housed, but there were a lot of medical issues just because of the improper husbandry that was going on.
Yeah.
What I tell my investigators, you know, our number one priority in our community is to educate. What we want to do is, you know, educate the public on what animal laws state and then have them comply with that. But, you know, in some of those cases, they're just not willing to comply or to work with us to improve the condition. So in that case, we, you know, obviously we're already involved with Montgomery County Constable's office. So they obtained a civil seizure warrant so we could go in and remove the animals so we could rescue them from that situation to get them back to the Houston SPCA where, you know, they could be properly vetted, cared for through the court process. But the story took a different turn in the days following after the seizure. One of our procedures is, you know, as we bring the animals in, they get their cruelty exams from the licensed veterinarians. We always check for microchips just to make sure that, you know, these aren't somebody else's pets that are been acquired. And in this case, there was a Great Pyrenees in the backyard. His name was Wrangler. Sure enough, it had a microchip. So we traced the microchip, and it ended up going to an individual who lived in Seattle, Washington. So we make these calls, and unfortunately, people who do microchip their animals usually don't follow up with providing follow-on information if they do move. But in this case, the person did. And sure enough, you know, the person answered the phone, and we asked them, you know, are you missing a Great Pyrenees dog? And he said, yeah, like for 3 years. So his story was also interesting. He was an Air Force veteran. He went on deployment, left his dog with somebody. That person decided they don't want to care for it anymore and got rid of the dog. And it ended up at this residence in Montgomery County, Texas. Mm-hmm. So when we contacted the owner, very surprised to hear that we had his dog and was very anxious to be reunited with him. Luckily, we have great friends at United Airlines who provided airfare to get the dog over to Seattle, Washington, and got to send one of my investigators as well to do a reuniting with him and the animal. It was pretty heartfelt. We don't get a lot of those happy endings to mm-hmm. the story. So it was a great time, a great investigation.
So what about the people, the owners there? Was there some kind of action taken against them?
Yeah. So, you know, we seized the animals civilly, so they had to go to court to fight for their animals. Of course, you know, the court system saw in our favor, awarded us the animals, and then criminal charges usually follow after that are filed later. So
mm-hmm. you probably run into cases where a lot of them have to be put to sleep, I would think.
Not necessarily. I mean, we have a great veterinarian team that our number one priority is to properly care for the animals. I have seen them. The efforts that they make are pretty exhaustive to save these animals so we can get them foster homes so we can eventually hopefully get them adopted out to loving homes as well.
Yeah. You provide a valuable service, Mr. Reynolds. Okay. Do you have any other stories?
Oh, I mean, I've got a ton of them.
Sure, let's hear them.
So one of my favorite stories, it was about my third week. So first of all, I'm not an animal person by trade. I'm a retired Marine. So when I first started this job, everything was surprising to me. About my third week here, I received a phone call from one of my investigators who said I have an abandonment at an apartment. And my first thought was, no big deal. You know, we do 10 of those a day. He said, no, you don't understand. These are spiders and they're scorpions. So, you know, the Houston SPCA, we are a campus for all animals, to include, they were Goliath bird eating tarantulas, king baboon tarantulas, ones that are as big as my forearm. So sure enough, you know, we all wanted to make location with this one to see the train wreck that was about to happen. And sure enough, a gentleman left his apartment, left nothing but a bookcase, a mattress, and 67 tarantulas and scorpions. Luckily, they were all individually housed, so we didn't have to play with them in the apartment. You know, my first lesson from that was there is a sanctuary for everything in Texas. So after the court procedures, after everything was done, all of these animals went to, you know, go live a happy bug life west of San Antonio. So
you even got the tarantulas adopted.
They went out to a sanctuary where they can go live a happy life.
Wow. So what other exotic animals experiences have you had with?
I mean, you know, we deal a lot with the equine and farm animals. Just in my 3 years, we've had tigers, bears, emus. I can't remember how long it was, but it was a red-tailed boa. I think it was about 7 or 8 feet long.
Ooh.
You know, just, I mean, a little of everything, a ton of different primates. You name it, we've probably seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew somebody had a monkey, and I'm not sure people should have monkeys.
I agree. They're really smart, and they can, they're very powerful, too.
And they have a lot of energy.
Yes. You know, I will also say, you know, one of the biggest misnomers we have are people who, you know, through the investigation, they explain, well, that, you know, this is not my dog, or this is not my cat. I just found it on the side of the road, and it's been living in my house for the past 2 months, and I've been feeding it. Well, Texas state law says that is your animal. Okay. It actually, you know, Texas state law doesn't even use the term owner. It says caregiver/caretaker. Mm-hmm. So
they're responsible for that animal if they take it in.
Absolutely. So, you know, if they do see an animal that's in distress, you know, the best thing to do, you know, give us a call. We will go out and we will pick it up and we will care for it. Because if you want to retain ownership of it or care of it, it's your responsibility. And we're going to hold you to the same standard that we would, you know, a regular owner of an animal.
It's only right, I think.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What about, Adam, what about things like, you hear about dog fights, chicken fights? Do you ever run into those situations?
Absolutely. You know, unfortunately, you know, the city of Texas, fourth largest city in the United States, we have a huge problem with rooster fighting as well as dog fighting. We had a case of, I think it was 360 fighting roosters on a property. And, you know, I can tell you that we are actively pursuing several of those cases right now. Those are, you know, again, we talk about dangerous suspects. I fear for, you know, not only the situation that's going on with the animals and the actual fighting, but it's all the other things that go along with some of those cases, gambling and gangs and some pretty bad stuff that can be going on in that residence as well. My investigators run every case start to finish until, you know, we usually don't involve law enforcement until the point of the need for a civil seizure warrant. Mm-hmm. That's true in all cases except for dog fighting. Whenever we believe it's a suspected dog fighter, we immediately involve our law enforcement partners. And the last thing I want is one of my investigators knocking on a door with nothing but a pen and a clipboard with all of those things that are going on on the other side of the door.
Sure. Well, have they ever actually gone out to an actual dog fight or chicken fight and broken it up?
Yes, sir. And actually, one of the last rooster cases that we ran, we actually interceded in the middle of the match. So in that case, you know, we were the ones who went through the gate first, and people were hopping the fence to run away. I think we ended up with, I think, 36 impounded vehicles. People were just leaving their property and running. So in that case, you know, the collection of evidence, it took probably, I think, more than 10 hours, like all the evidence that was left behind. One of the funny stories about that case was, you know, as we involved the local tow truck drivers to begin impounding the vehicles, people who had fled the scene were meeting those vehicles at gunpoint at the end of the street, trying to get the vehicles back. So then we had to get a tactical unit to assist with escorting the tow truck drivers out of the area.
Oh, so boy.
Some pretty nefarious people that would deal with that.
But now let's get it straight here. All of that is completely illegal, chicken fights, dog.
Yes, sir. So even just viewing a cockfight in the state of Texas is now illegal, having any of the paraphernalia. So the blades, the muffs, all of that is illegal in the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm. You know, I moved here about 22 years ago, And wasn't it semi-legal or something at one time? Because I knew.
Yeah, even up until last year in the state of Louisiana, a lot of it was still legal. Luckily, enough legislation has been put forward to make all of those actions illegal.
So is it pretty much national now? It's not legal anywhere?
Yes, sir.
That is good to hear. Sounds like your job is, it can be real heartbreaking, but it could be real rewarding as well.
Absolutely. When I walk to work, when I park my car and walk through to my office every day, I get to walk through where all of the cats and the dogs are, and I get to see them, you know, living in this now, you know, this beautiful, beautiful building where they're being cared for every day. And I can remember, like, I saw you 3 weeks ago when you were in this horrible house and deplorable conditions, getting to see them adopted each day. It makes this job all worth it.
Yeah. Sounds to me, Adam, like you started out as a big, tough Marine guy. But now you're getting kind of a soft heart for these
animals. Don't tell anybody that, please.
Well, I think that's great. Well, do you have any parting words for the public in general on what we can do, how we can cooperate with your department?
Sure. I encourage everybody to go to our website, HoustonSPCA.org. If you can, please donate. You can also report cruelty through the website or through calling our number at 713-869-SPCA. Also, if you have injured unowned animals in Harris County, call us as well so we can get them the help that they need.
Excellent. Great advice. Okay, Chief Reynolds, thank you so much for being with us here tonight. Good luck in all your endeavors, and thank you for the services you provide to our community.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
You bet. Our next guest tonight will be Brooke Yaney. Brooke has a degree in music education and was a middle school band director in New Mexico. But since 2014, she's been doing wildlife rehab for the Wildlife Center of Texas. When she's not feeding baby squirrels, she's taking in injured and orphaned wildlife from the public. Brooke, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, apparently, you specialize in the wildlife aspects of animal rescue. Could you just briefly tell us a bit about your role in that?
Yeah, so I work for the Houston SPCA's Wildlife Center of Texas. We're a wildlife hospital, so we take in things that are injured, orphaned, all of that, and we rehabilitate them and try to release them back into the wild.
Sounds interesting. Yeah, we always think of cats and dogs when we think of the SPCA and so forth, but there's a pretty big wildlife component as well.
Yeah, for sure. We take in all animals. We're a campus for all animals, so we take in wildlife. They take in farm animals like horses, things like that. They also do exotics, like we've had bears and stuff like that before too. So,
wow. Okay, well, why don't you tell us some stories about your work and what is involved in it and what you experience?
Okay, sure. One of the main ones that comes to mind, it was kind of my first major wildlife crisis experience, was right after I started working for the Wildlife Center back in 2014. That winter, I started in September, and that December, we got in over 100 pelicans within the course of like 2 weeks. And it was down in Galveston, down in like Seawolf Park and those areas where there's a lot of fishing going on. You know, there was a lot of people out, and the pelicans were struggling that year, especially the babies, the juveniles, the ones that had been born that year. They were just having a hard time. So the combination of that ended up with pelicans grabbing fish off of people's lines, and they just ended up with a lot of fishing hooks inside them and on them and wrapped with fishing line, and it was just a chaotic circumstance. And Galveston Animal Control, the Galveston police down there, they were very good about getting those birds to us. So we ended up with over 100, and we were constantly tubing pelicans, gavage tubing them. We were giving medications, and it was just like you did four in this cage, and then you moved to the next cage, and then you start at the beginning once you've gone through all of them. So that was kind of my very first experience of how chaotic this job can be at times, but it was nuts.
Well, were you very successful in saving many pelicans?
We were, yeah. The main thing, like I said, they were mostly just internal and external fishing hooks and fishing line. And we were able to remove most of all of that stuff and ended up saving almost all of the pelicans. So
yeah, that's a big problem. You hear about debris, plastics, fishing gear interfering with sea wasps.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not always people's fault, but definitely there's some things that we can do to kind of mitigate that. As far as if you're going fishing, you want to make sure you clean up after yourself and you take all of your line with you. Because even normally during the year, we'll still get animals that are covered in fishing line and stuff like that that people have carelessly left behind.
Yeah. So we got to clean up after ourselves.
Yeah, for sure.
So any other stories you have about your work? I'm sure you got millions of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many great stories. Like, every week there's something happening here. Even last week, I was actually at lunch during when this happened, but my coworkers told me about it afterwards. We had some police officers who came in. There's a group of three officers and they had some black-bellied whistling ducks and they were little babies. And apparently they had stopped traffic to grab these ducks off of the interchange between I-10 and 610. And they had just stopped traffic because there was just a line of little baby ducks going up the ramp. And so they stopped traffic, grabbed up those ducklings. They didn't have anything to put them in, of course. So they ended up just putting them in the back seat of the police car. And then my coworker had to go out to the police car and grab them up. And yeah, it was just, I mean, there's stuff like that that happens every day here at the Wildlife Center.
I like that scene where there's a mother duck walking along and there's like 20 little baby ducks walking by. And I've seen that before where they'll stop traffic and here's all these big cars waiting for these little ducks.
Yep. Yeah. Now, I guess these ducklings were by themselves. They didn't have the parents with them. So they would never have survived, especially on I-10. So, yeah, I'm glad that they were able to find those guys and pick them up safely. Yes.
Yeah, me too. Hey, what other stories you have for us?
I remember when it was probably back in 2015, we got some baby bobcats that came in from League City. Some mowers, they were city mowers. They had gone through a park and they had disturbed the den of these bobcats and they found these babies and they tried to reunite them with the mom, but the mom had run off. She was scared off by the mowers and she never came back. So they ended up bringing us the babies and they were adorable. I had never seen baby bobcats before this and it was just such a joy to have them. And it ended up, we had to do night feedings for them because they were so tiny. They were only like 3 days old when we found them. And so I ended up taking them home one night. I had them in my closet of my apartment because I have cats of my own. And so I didn't want them to intermingle so that they were sitting in the closet overnight.
You had bobcats in your closet.
Yes. Yeah, two baby bobcats in my closet. And I got up at midnight and I fed them just like you would for baby kittens. And they did so well. They survived and they were released a couple of months later. So it was very fun to have those guys with me that night. It was only one night, but I will remember that night forever.
Uh-huh. So when these animals are raised by humans and you put them back in the wild, does that pose problems? Like they're not accustomed to it?
It can. And we see this a lot with people when they don't know what they're doing and they have kept, especially like baby squirrels, they'll keep them and think that they're doing a great thing, but they're actually hurting the squirrel. What we do here is we know that this is an issue and can be an issue. So we make sure to have very, very minimal handling and we keep them isolated away from people as much as possible. And we really only handle them as necessary. We don't cuddle them and pet them and all of that stuff that people might do if they were trying to keep it as a pet. So we don't have as much of an issue with that, but it definitely would help if they had their mom with them to raise them. But unfortunately, that's just not the situation with a lot of the stuff that we get in. So we do the best that we can for sure.
Well, it's almost irresistible when you see a poor little lost animal, you want to take them in and baby them, but
I know
you got to be careful. You know, they're still animals.
Yeah, we even have to do that here. We'll tell volunteers, you know, you can't talk to them, you don't pet them, you can't baby voice them, anything like that. You just have to feed them and then you're done. You put it back.
Right. Do you have a favorite animal?
I do. My overall favorite, I think, is the barred owl because they're very majestic, but they also have like a very distinct personality to them. They can be very aggressive. They like to point their talons like right at your face and grab your face. So
your favorite animal is one that wants to grab your face with their talons.
Yes. I know that seems very odd, but I like that they're so feisty and they're just gorgeous to look at. So that's probably my favorite.
Well, Brooke, I enjoyed all your stories tonight. Sounds like you have a fascinating life there with SPCA. And do you have any parting thoughts or you can give our listeners as far as how they should deal with wildlife?
Sure. It's always a good idea if you find injured or orphan wildlife, give us a call. We can definitely walk you through how to pick those up and bring them in. We're open every day of the week, and we're happy to take those things. As far as just keep care of your environment, take good care of it, pick up after yourself.
Okay. Well, that's very good advice, Brooke. And thanks again for being our guest. And thanks for the services you provide to the community.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're going to take a break from our stories now for station identification and to make a few announcements. You're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Now, Houston knows very well the power of story, and we've got several venues here to prove it. Let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And when we return to the real world, the Guild holds its swap at Temple Emmanuel Church, located at 1500 Sunset. But for now, we're having a ton of fun, folks zooming in from all over the country. The next swap is Tuesday, October 27th. Visit the Guild's website at houstonstorytellers.org for the Zoom link for that and for information about all of our upcoming events, including dates and times for Skyline Screamers, Telebration, and our Children's Workshop. And while you're on the site, enjoy our past So What's Your Story programs, all of them since 2008, listed on the menu under Radio Program. And there's no need for a radio when tuning in every week to our award-winning program because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org. Get to know us by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page and be sure to share it with friends. Got program ideas, guests, maybe yourself? Let us know by dropping us a note at story@kpft.org and we promise to get back to you. Our friends at The Moth are not packing them into Warehouse Live at the moment, but you can catch them online, including nationwide story slams you'll love. And for anyone wanting to take their storytelling skills to the next level, why not become a member of Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network? My next guest is Kim Melonson, who works for an organization called AIR. It stands for Animal Investigation and Response. Now, what AIR does is they respond to natural disaster situations like hurricanes and tornadoes and rescue the animals in those situations. Kim has been rescuing animals since her teens and now serves on the board of a large breed rescue group. Hey, Kim, good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, could you give us a general overall picture of what you do with AIR?
Sure. We are Animal Investigation and Response, commonly known as AIR, and we are a nonprofit mobile emergency response unit that responds to natural and what we call man-made disasters that affect animals. And those are generally going to be things that exceed the local capacity of the local authorities.
Uh-huh. So essentially, AIR handles situations, natural disasters at a larger scale basis than just like one or two dogs at a time.
Yeah, I think that we like to tell people that they exceed local capacity, and that looks differently in different areas, right? So obviously in our more rural shelter areas where we have just a sheriff and they don't have a shelter, that's going to look different than it is in our major cities.
So now, Kim, I saw a video, an AIR video on YouTube, and I was fascinated by it. The video is called Hollywood Hound.
Yeah.
It addresses another important issue in animal rescue. Let's hear that story.
You know, Hollywood Hounds is more what I think of as a man-made disaster. And it was criminal hoarding or criminal neglect. And in that instance, it was a little different in that this was a situation where the city came up on an eviction to a home in which they were unprepared to find the animals and ended up finding about 50. We got a call that morning from the director of the shelter saying, I got a call from the constables saying they're doing an eviction and I have 50 dogs that I don't have space for and they're not social. So, and in this instance, it was a situation where a family probably started out with two dogs or four dogs that they didn't spay and neuter. And all of a sudden dogs do what dogs do and you end up with 50. There was no food, no water for the animals. They were living in their own waste and their own filth, which meant ammonia toxicity for a lot of the animals, but they had no human interaction. They weren't very social animals and they were very fearful. On top of having partial blindness from the ammonia and their skin issues, they didn't feel good. So we were able to take a 2,500 square foot warehouse empty space. And within a few hours, our responders were able to put up kennels, set up feeding stations, setting up a play yard. We set up a small triage animal clinic, and we were able to do that in a few hours. So then we were able to use Beast, which is our other response unit, to go get those animals and bring them to the shelter. Now, these guys were terrified. A lot of them, we had to carry them in. They were just fearful and shut down. It's what we typically see of boarding dogs. And again, in this instance, because there was a court-ordered hold, we held onto the animals during that process, and our team got to work. And this is so important because it's not just the daily care and the feeding, the walks and all that. It's teaching these guys that, yes, you're going to get food on a regular basis. Yeah, you guys are going to get clean water and letting their bodies process the clean water and letting their kidneys come back to normal and watching the clouding of the ammonia in their eyes clear and watching their skin clear up. But also just teaching them that they can share space with a human and it's not scary. Teaching them that they can have a human in proximity to them. And, oh, what's that tasty cheese thing? Like, these guys didn't know what cheese was. They don't know what treats are. They don't know what a tennis ball is. So in the middle of that, we also took another response of dogs that was the angel dogs from a similar hoarding situation. And we're thinking, okay, we got this. And then COVID hits, right? So now we have placement, out-of-state placement for these guys, but we don't know, are the roads going to be closed? Are borders going to be closed? And then on top of that, we ended up with the concern that keeping our responders healthy in it, right? Like, because we can't help the dogs if we can't keep our people healthy, and our people's health is our first priority. So with the help of the ASPCA and some other partners, we were able to get transport to Minnesota. And with Monica and I actually took dogs to Minnesota in a van. We traveled in with masks and then we drove up there and we came back. So responding during COVID was another challenge.
Were they all in Minnesota, all the dogs?
What happened was, is Humane Tomorrow, who is an amazing rescue partner for us, they took about 19 of the animals. We had a couple of other rescue groups that did take some of the animals, but we had about 26 that traveled to Minnesota. Other states, it's kind of mind-boggling. Other states don't have the same pet population issues that we have here in Texas, and they need animals for adoptables.
Wow. There's actually a shortage in some places.
Absolutely, and that's some other states are a little bit more proactive in their spay-neuter laws and in their animal welfare laws. And also, quite frankly, because of the harsh winters, you know, you don't have the breeding and the survival rate over the harsh winters that you have here in Texas.
Yeah, I would think hoarding would be a terrible environment for animals. I mean, you see, you know, on television, they have that show and so on. An animal in that situation would just be suffocated.
Yeah, their survival skills definitely kick in. And I'm really amazed at how some of these animals survive.
Okay, now, Kim, your last story deals with a very disturbing subject of cockfighting. Yeah. And so I know it's a pretty difficult subject to talk about, but one that needs to be addressed. So let's hear your last story. I believe it's called The Freedom Flock.
Yeah, roosters are an interesting thing. If you talk about what cockfighting is a blood sport. It is illegal in all 50 states. These are animals that are taken by humans, bred for the purpose of fighting to the death. Mm-hmm. So what happens is they amputate their combs, which is that part on the top of a rooster's, you know, if you think of what a rooster looks like, the top and the part of their head, they amputate their wattles that are the part underneath their beaks on their necks, as well as they amputate their natural spurs that are on their legs. And they amputate those natural spurs so it's easier to strap on razor blades and shanks for the animals to use to kill their opponents.
So they just turn them into little killing machines.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's all for gambling and sport. There's, I mean, there's no reason for a rooster to do that.
Yeah.
They underfeed them to keep them hungry, and they purposely do things to make them aggressive.
Right.
Cockfighting is illegal in all 50 states.
Yes.
In some states, you can still sell cockfighting accessories, but cockfighting is illegal. So I don't know what the heck people are legally doing with stuff they can, shanks and stuff you strap to rooster's legs.
What else can you do with them? Yes. Okay.
Right.
Okay. But, well, let's hear that last story. It's called Freedom Flock.
We got a contact by a sheriff's department who received a tip that they were in the process of raiding and busting a cockfight in which they seized 58 roosters. There were several arrests and citations issued, and that's still criminally pending, but they did seize the roosters. Generally, the resources to roosters, there's just not a lot, right? But you're required to hold those during as evidence during the court proceedings.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times at the end of that court proceeding, those animals, once custody is turned over to the authorities, those animals are euthanized because how do you place a little fighting machine?
Sure.
We approached it a little bit different, and I have to credit Monica for this. She was determined to try and find placement for these roosters so that we would not have to euthanize them. And we get a lot of no's. And not because people don't want to help, but because they don't have the resources to help, right? So we got a lot of no's until we came across an organization in North Carolina that would accept all 58 roosters.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine there was some skepticism, like you're going to take all 58 roosters. But we went through the process and we were thrilled that this group was going to take them. But now a new challenge, because in order for roosters to cross state lines, they have to be PT tested and avian flu tested and have health certificates.
Mm-hmm.
Things you didn't think you needed, right? We had an expert who had to come in, and miraculously, they all tested negative, and our transport team was able to take all 58 roosters to South Carolina.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I'm glad that one had a happy ending. I guess it can't always be like a Walt Disney movie here, because I hear a lot of tragedies. Kim, I really enjoyed your stories tonight. And thank you for being here. Keep up the good work with AIR.
Thank you.
And would you like to leave our listening audience with any general message of how they can participate and help?
Yeah, I think that if people are interested in what we do and they support what we do, obviously donations is great. They can visit our website, animalinvestigationandresponse.org. And there is a volunteer application there, as well as a donate button. But I also want to encourage people to volunteer, to be kind, to volunteer in your local animals or animal shelters or with a rescue, to foster. Fostering absolutely saves lives.
Okay, well, thanks again, Kim, and keep up the good work. Thanks for being here tonight.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our next guest tonight is Bonnie Hale. Bonnie is a pet detective originally from California, but now lives in Grapevine, Texas, where she owns and operates her company called Lost Pet Specialist. It's good to have Bonnie here with us tonight. So, Bonnie, give us a little more background on exactly what you do in your business here.
Sure, Eric. I have a small business where I help people find their lost, missing, or stolen pets. They call me and say frantic, emotional language that they've lost their dog or cat usually, and they need some help. So they call me and I start asking questions. But the two things they can hire me to do are on-site searches, where I actually come and bring one or more of the search dogs who are trained to do this work and search for their pet for a specified amount of time.
Tell us about these dogs, Bonnie. I always picture bloodhounds, but I saw online there, they're not always bloodhounds.
No, they're not. One of my good friends, a pet detective in California, she uses all bloodhounds. I think she has six of them. My dogs are my pets, too.
I notice your dogs, from what I've seen, are rescue dogs, right? The ones you use in your work?
These dogs were all homeless at some point before they came to me.
Do your dogs need any training, or do they? Is this something that comes natural to them?
Yes, of course. So they've all been trained, for example, teaching a dog to alert on decomposing remains, because unfortunately that is sometimes part of our job. One of the stories I'll tell you talks about that. That's the easiest thing to teach a dog, because all dogs love dead stuff. You know, they want to go roll in it or pee on it or whatever they do.
And I would think there's a stronger smell there, isn't there?
Definitely stronger to us, yeah. But yeah, they all have to be trained. So that's the easiest thing. And the hardest thing is teaching a dog to track. That's the little, I think of it as a little breadcrumb trail of scent particles. And scent is the dead skin cells that fall from everybody's body. Yours, mine, or my dog, my cat, everybody is shedding skin cells.
That is incredible. So we're all just a little few skin cells. That's what they smell.
Yeah.
Boy, that's incredible. Yeah.
So my dogs do a combination of air scent and ground scent.
Okay. Well, why don't we get to your stories, Bonnie? I'm sure you've got some good ones.
Okay. Well, the first thing I'll tell you is just how kind of how I got into this business. It was never my intention. It really happened serendipitously. When I saw on the news that when I lived in St. Louis, that a couple from Michigan was visiting in St. Louis and their car was stolen not far from my house. And this car was stolen from the tourist area and their dog was in the back seat in a crate.
Right.
So it got on the TV news because these people were offering a large reward. So I called them and I said, I don't have your dog, but I have a car. Because I just pictured myself driving them around to shelters where they would look for their dog. Yeah. Nobody wants to take a dog to the pound anymore. You know, we're all afraid it'll be euthanized. And of course, that's the one place that owners will still look for their dog, but nobody wants to take a dog there. So,
sure.
So when I called them, that's what I pictured myself doing. And he was no special breed. The owners were not well-off people, but they scrounged together this $5,000 reward, hoping it would make a difference. But they found the contents of the car. The thieves had taken everything out of the car that they didn't want. There was still no car and still no dog. And we spent 2 or 3 months trying to find that little dog. And never did turn up. But at the time, the owners didn't have a cell phone. This was a long time ago. And their phone number was not local to St. Louis, so we used my phone number because I did have a cell phone. And at one point, my phone number was on about 50,000 pieces of advertising for this little dog, trying to get somebody to say where this dog was. And people pitched in extra money, and the reward went up to $20,000 for this dog.
Wow.
Because people were so interested. And so at that point, people started stealing dogs and bringing them to me because it was my phone number.
For the reward?
Wanting the reward. They're like, here's your dog. Give me the money. And I'm like, that is a poodle, not a Lhasa Apso mix.
Oh, my.
You know? And so this little group of us, it turned into just this ridiculous operation where we spent half of our time trying to find the owner of the dog that had just been brought to us. It took over my life in a way that really nothing ever had before.
It's funny how one incident like that, like
funny?
You happened to see this report on the television, got you interested in that. Next thing you know, you got a whole new life. How did that story end?
Well, we never found Maddie. One of the things the owners did try was a tracking dog. They hired a gal who came up from Alabama, and she was quite new. The dog was brand new. Neither of them had done this. You know, I mean, they had some training, but they hadn't been at this for very long.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't find Maddie. But I was fascinated. Uh-huh. Like, I was like, hey. And I took my first dog, Murphy, who was an Australian Shepherd. No special breeding for that. Just used the dog I had.
Okay, so that's the story of how you got started with this.
Right, right. So I think you had asked me about success rate, and everybody asks me, what's your success rate? And my answer is it's anywhere from 0 to 80%. Mm-hmm. So 80% is our best subject, which is the indoor only cat who has been missing for less than 3 days.
Uh-huh.
We find about 80% of them because they are hiding. They're nearby and they're hiding.
Oh, yeah.
And when cats hide, they actually undergo a physiological change that protects them from predators. A predator finds you with his eyes, ears, or his nose, and everything about the cat minimizes those three things.
Ah.
So they don't move, they don't eat, they don't drink, they don't pee or poop.
They don't make a sound.
They don't make a sound for 4 to 10 days. Ah. So if I get there before the 4 days, I'm pretty sure I'm going to find it.
Oh, yeah.
So those are super fun. And then you had also asked me about the famous aardvark case.
Let's hear about the aardvark.
The aardvark. My success rate on aardvarks is holding steady at 0%. We've only searched for the one. It was a small petting zoo in North Texas that owned this aardvark. But they had lost this aardvark named Hamburger. and in this case, seen an aardvark, much less trained on one.
So whatever happened, did anybody find Hamburger, the aardvark?
No, we did find several anthills that he had raided as we were following the trail, which was something I've never seen before.
Yeah.
These had clearly been raided by the aardvark. Yeah. And I have a feeling that one of our local predators probably got him. Yeah. They're basically defenseless if they're not in the trees.
Well, let's just assume he found a nice home somewhere.
Let's go with that, sure. Because everyone who sees an aardvark will pick it up.
Yes, yes. Okay, Bonnie, well, thank you for your service, first of all, to the community. It sounds like what you do really provides a service for a lot of people. And thank you for being here tonight and telling your stories.
Thanks, Eric. That was fun.
Yes. Our next guest is Becky Best, Community Relations Manager at Houston Pet Set. When Becky is not helping homeless animals, she serves on the board of directors for the Houston chapter of the Public Relations Society of America, and she enjoys golfing with her significant other, Mark. Becky, welcome. Good to have you on. So what's your story?
Thanks so much for having me today.
You betcha. Before we get to your stories, could you give us a brief summary of what exactly you do with Pet Set, what your role is there?
Sure. I'm the Community Relations and Grants Manager, and one of the roles that I have is overseeing our program that really founded the organization, and that's grants to nonprofit organizations that are feet on the ground doing animal welfare work.
Okay, Becky. Well, I understand you have some stories about your work that you can tell us tonight, so let's hear your first story about it.
Okay. There was an evening I was scrolling through Facebook, and I noticed a rescuer had posted an urgent plea for a mom with 9 puppies. And it turned out that this mom had been living in a park by herself. She was pregnant, and the park was right next to a neighborhood center. And the people had been watching this dog and over the couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden they noticed that she didn't look pregnant anymore. So they assumed that she must have had her babies. There was a gazebo in the park, and they assumed that the puppies must be underneath there. And they were quite concerned about how safe they would be in that environment. So they asked the rescuer to come out and help, and she agreed to do that, and they said they were going to go get the puppies. So they went out to the park, and they got under the gazebo and dug around, and, you know, they got one puppy out, and then another, and then another. 9 puppies later, they pulled them all out, and so they leashed up mom, got the puppies in a box, and then headed over to the center and waited for the rescuer to come and pick them up. About that time, the phone rang, and so they went inside to quickly get the phone, and when the employee came back out, 4 of the puppies were gone.
Oh. And,
yeah, so they were very concerned because a lot of people don't realize puppies, especially that young, really need to be with their moms. It's really important that they're there and can nurse, and they eat every couple of hours. So there was a lot of concern about what might have happened with these puppies. So the employee started asking around, and it turned out that a couple of the kids that had been at the center that day had seen the puppies in a box, just assumed that they were free for the taking, and grabbed a couple to take home with them. So fortunately, the rescuer was able to get the rest of the puppies and mom out safely, and they ended up coming actually to my house to be fostered for a while. And then the employee decided that they would try to hunt down the other kids and see if they could get the puppies back. And then miraculously, the next day, they were able to find the puppies. Fortunately, all of them were still in good health. So we were very fortunate that we were able to get all of them back, and everybody was healthy. And the night prior, mom had just been pacing back and forth. And granted, she was in a new environment, but I really do believe that she was very worried about those other puppies. So when I was able to walk in the next day with the four puppies there and she got to see them all, she was so excited to see them. Mm-hmm. And the puppies all got to be reunited. And we, as I mentioned before, we have a transport program where we're able to transport animals from here in Houston, where there's really just an abundance. We've got about 65,000 animals that go into the shelter every year. Unwanted, and we're able to transport those up, in our case, to the Midwest. So Roxy and her nine puppies hung out at my house, creating havoc and messes that you would not believe for a number of weeks. And once they got older and had gotten all their vaccinations and it was safe for them to travel, we were able to put them on our big red bus. We call her Big Bertha. And she's an old converted school bus, and she rolled them on up to the Midwest, and they were able to be adopted and hopefully live happily ever after.
Great. Another happy ending. I love those. But yeah, I mean, that's the saddest thing at all when there's pregnant pets out there and they have their puppies or their kittens, and boy, that's a vulnerable situation. Oh, also, I think the kids should know that if you see a mess of newborn puppies right there, they're not free for the taking.
Right. I think that was probably a valuable lesson in all this, too. And as I understand, the kids were pretty embarrassed later on and glad that they were able to get the puppies back to their mom.
I'm sure they meant well.
Sure.
And so do you have another story here, Becky, about your work? I'd love to hear a little more.
Sure. There was another situation. It was last December when we were sitting in our office, back when we still went to offices. And a member of the maintenance team had come up to our office, and Mario was his name. He was telling us about this dog that had arrived in his neighborhood about 6 months earlier. And he started living across the street under a parked car in his neighbor's front yard. And so the dog, at first, they just kind of ignored it, but the dog began looking skinny. So Mario and some of the neighbors would take turns feeding it. And Mario said that he seemed like the dog had a routine. He'd be out there in the morning. He'd watch the cars go by. He would go play with some of his friends around the corner. He would go kind of check out the other dogs in the neighborhood and then return home in the evening to be fed. And he had noticed this dog had suddenly began to limp. And so he didn't really know what was going on with the dog, how injured he might be, but there was a big storm that was coming our direction, and it was going to be cold. And he was really worried that between the cold temperatures and the injury that the dog might not survive. So he said that he started losing sleep about this and was really worried and just asked if there was any way that we could help. And although we don't normally do a lot of boots on the ground type of rescue, we wanted to make sure to help Mario and this dog. And the holidays were coming, so we decided this was going to be Operation St. Nick, and we were going to name this boy St. Nick. And we went out there and tried to create our Christmas miracle. And we got to the location where Mario said he would be, and sure enough, he was there. We tried our, you know, kind of secret weapon, which is a plain hamburger from McDonald's, and he would come over, and he was really interested in it, but we just could not get a leash around him. And we kept trying for a couple of days, but to no avail. And so finally, we realized we needed to call in the experts and get someone to come in and actually dart him. And we had been told that he was too smart to get into little shelters or backyards or what have you. So we knew that we had a bit of a Houdini on our hands. So the animal control came in to help us, a private company, and they were going to dart him. The first question they asked was, are there any holes in the fences around that you're aware of? And, you know, we looked, we didn't see anything. So we thought we were good to go. They dart him. He takes off and immediately finds a small hole in a fence. Right. And so he is now hidden from sight. the house actually is vacant. And so we can't go into the backyard to look for the dog until the police arrive. So we're waiting for the police. And by the time that we get in the backyard, the dog is nowhere to be seen. So he once again had managed to escape. And so we drove around looking and no sign whatsoever. So we went back the next day, no sign of the dog at all. And we were quite worried that something bad may have happened. But on the third day, we went back and sure enough, he was around the corner playing with one of his friends. We were able to dart him that day. And he was a little skittish at first, but we had some work with him through training. And then once he saw that he could trust people, that they weren't going to be mean to him, then he really started to open up. And we found a wonderful family that was used to shy dogs. And so now he has a wonderful fur brother named Freddie. And the family just could not be any happier. They're all together and still send updates on a regular basis about how they're all doing.
Super. Well, we're 3 for 3 on the happy endings here. That's a great thing.
Yes, I think there's so much sadness in rescue work. And so I think it's important for all of us that are working in rescue to focus on the victories when we can.
Sure.
But there are a lot of stories that don't have happy endings. And it's very frustrating. And it really does take a toll on a lot of people that are working in the rescue community.
Right. Yeah. Some of those stories are heartbreaking. Yeah. And I know it's frustrating when you see a stray dog like in the neighborhood. But they're very elusive, some of them, and you try to feed them, try to lure them, and they just won't come near you. So in that case, you call animal control. Was that the best?
Yeah, you can, or a rescue group. Right now is kind of an interesting time because with COVID, it's changed a lot about how the shelters are operating. So it's making it a little bit harder to get staffing covered to be able to do a lot of the pickups. So in some cases, they're suggesting that healthy animals stay on the streets. Obviously, in rescue, we're very worried about that because there's a lot of cars zipping around, people not paying attention. And the longer an animal stays out there, the more likely it is that they could be hit or starve or get sick in some other way. So we really are hoping that this changes soon.
So did I get that right? They are encouraging stray animals to stay stray a little more now during the COVID?
That is what they have been saying temporarily. So that is where we're at. But if an animal seems to be injured or sick in some way, right, then definitely would like to see those animals coming into the shelter.
Yeah. Okay, Becky. Well, thanks for those stories. They're very interesting and thought-provoking and educational as well. Keep up the good work with Pets Out There. And thank you so much for being our guest this evening.
Great. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Take care.
All right, you too.
Bye. Well, that concludes our show for tonight, folks. We heard from various types of animal experts who all had stories to remind us to be nice to our furry friends. And next week, Dr. Hank Rubicek, our founder and producer of this show, will be hosting our annual Halloween Blast. That's always a good show. He'll be highlighting a few Texas ghost stories and more. In the meantime, KPFT.org and our Facebook page are the places to go if donations are possible for you at this time. And don't you dare move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on Tennyson's Tape Deck. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday life. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. and cherish what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Eric Heen, and along with the rest of the So It's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
First you listen, then you fall in love. You have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week. And finally, you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today. And when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them. A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio. With such mediocrity, improvement of radio is utopian. When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better. Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community. But maintaining this sort of radio requires you. Your pledge of support keeps KPFT.